All right. Welcome to my podcast, Stronger Than You Think. Today I have guest Kim, and is it Sorrell? Is that how you say your last name?
It
Okay.
is.
Okay. I should have asked you that before, but Kim Sorrell is with me. We met in Houston, and I don't know a whole lot about her except that she's super cool. And I was listening to her actually on another podcast, and I heard that we have Haiti in common. And so I was like, hold on, we got to talk about this. And so I wanted to get her on my show. So, Kim, could you give us a quick little introduction, a little bit about yourself, whatever you'd like to share?
Sure. Yeah. So I've been in the business world forever. I started my first business when I was 18, and I've bought and sold and started and done and whatever. And kind of sold the ones that were sucking the life out of me a couple of years ago. And so I write, I've got some books out. I write, I speak. I have a podcast. I've got a TV show. I love people, and I have lots of kids and grandkids and dog sitting right now for my daughter. So anyway, life is great.
That's awesome. It's living life. Tell me about your books. I didn't know you wrote books. What do
Yeah,
you
so
read?
the right. Yeah, so I've got two out right now. The first one, I started writing when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I went to the bookstore, and everything was either very medical or very depressing. And I was like, well, what does it feel like? What do I expect? Are there choices to make? What do I need to do? And so I started writing emails at the time, and just a way to update family and friends. But it was so much more than just I'm going to the doctor tomorrow. And before I knew it, 5,000 people were reading the emails I was sending. And so I started writing then. And 4 months into writing, my husband was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and passed away 6 weeks later. So I was writing throughout that whole time and then beyond. I wrote for about a year when I was done with my cancer stuff after that. And Cry Until You Laugh is the name of the book. And so it's not as depressing as the story sounds, maybe, because there's so much hope and resilience, and you can get through stuff. And it was an awful time, but also taught me a lot at the same time. So that's my first book. My second book, I decided I was going to figure out the true meaning of love. Like, I looked for it, wondered what it was, and nobody seemed to have the same answer. Like, you put 14 people in a room, you get 14 different answers to what is love. And so I dedicated a year to figuring it out. It was sort of an eat, pray, love kind of experience. I was mostly in Haiti when I was doing it, and the things that I found out about love just changed my life, rocked my world. And so I wrote a book about the experience. Love is the name of the book. And so that's my second book. And then I've got a couple more coming out
That's
before long.
awesome. Oh my gosh. So, I mean, immediately you've just in like what, 2 minutes, you've shared so many like stronger than you think, resilience, hope, things that you've made it through. And you're sitting here, for those of you who aren't watching and just listening, she's just smiling and beautiful and happy and radiates this positivity. And I think it would be really easy to not do that with the things that you've been through, any one of those things, let alone all of them. And I see over your shoulder the book Love Is. I see it back there. I'm excited. I'm going to go check it out. I didn't even realize you were a writer, so now I'm going to go look at it and I'm going to read it. I'm super excited about this. So, is it okay if I ask you a little bit about Haiti? I have a big
Yes.
in my heart in Haiti. So, tell me, why did you get involved with Haiti? Like, I heard your story on another podcast, and it's like, I kind of want you to tell any story from Haiti because I've been there and I know that. At least when I was there, I was like, wait, am I seeing this? I had a friend who'd been many times and I kept like hitting her. I was like, Shannon, is this for real? Am I really seeing this? And so for people who have been to Haiti, you understand if you're not Haitian and that's not where you're from, you're coming from a different place. And my gosh, it's a whole different experience. But could you maybe share a little bit about that, how you got involved with Haiti?
Well, I had been doing work in the Dominican Republic. I still do work in the Dominican Republic, nonprofit work, schools and water projects and things like that. And when I went to Haiti for the first time, which was 20 plus years ago, I swore I'd never go back again. It was the hardest place I'd ever been. It seemed like, I don't believe in hopeless. I think there's always hope, but if there was a hopeless, Haiti is a pretty desperate place. And I've never experienced such thick poverty. And it was really tough to be there. It was really tough. And I remember showering last night before I'm leaving there and standing in the shower and saying, don't ever make me come back here. Like, I never want to come back here. And I was home for a couple of weeks before I couldn't wait to go back again. There's something about Haiti that gets in your system. It's, yes, there's all the poverty and it's sad and it hurts, but there's also things you can do about it. And really it's about the people and so many fantastic people that that's what kept me going back for sure is the people there.
That's awesome. And so you said you have a water, you said work, schools, water, that was all in Dominican Republic and also in Haiti.
Yeah. Well, the organization that I run, Rays mm-hmm. of Hope International, it's a humanitarian organization. We are a partnering organization. So we work with people who in their own country have a passion, mission, vision to help people in their own country and just need someone to walk alongside because they need funding, they need a business plan, they need something. So they want to build a medical clinic, start a medical clinic or a school or whatever it is, but they just need some help for a while. And we always work toward sustainability. So I've worked with a whole lot of people in Haiti and love it. It's if you think about it, anybody listening, pray for people in Haiti. It's not a great situation there now. It's getting a little bit better, but it's tough. And it's interesting, you know, there's no McDonald's in Haiti. Mm-hmm. And everywhere else in the world, there seems to be a McDonald's, right? Like I've been to African countries that have great poverty and drought and famine and things like that, and McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of speaks to Haiti a little bit that there's not anything like that. There's not a big Sam's Club to go buy a big bags of rice and beans all together and whatever. I mean, it can be difficult to find the things you need in Haiti. Jobs are few and far between. Schools, there's not enough schools for everybody. It's just a tough place to live. But there's something, again, there's just something special about Haitian people, and talk about hope and resilience. Yeah. They are the epitome of that, I would say.
Yeah. Absolutely. We actually adopted, well, he was 16 at the time and he's now part of our family, and he's actually from Jacmel. And I think you said that was where that story was from the other podcast I was listening to. And I was like, Jacmel, what? I know that place. So it's cool hearing his stories. I mean, the night of the earthquake, he spent the night in, when he was 8 years old, in a graveyard, 'cause that was the safest place for him. And, mm-hmm. I was going to say you and I, but I'll just say, I can't imagine any of my children spending the night in a graveyard, let alone myself at this age, even spending the night in a graveyard, because that was the safest place. Like, the resilience of these people is incredible. And when I was there, I know my heart just, I mean, I wanted to take them all. I just want to take all of them. And then at the same time, it was beautiful because I went and visited with my friend. She has a foundation, it's called Haitian Roots, and they sponsor kids to go to school. And we were handing out scholarship money, but we went like downtown, like where sort of normal people don't go, which sounds like that's where kind of you were, not downtown, but where normal people don't go, right? Where it's not really safe. And we went there and it was this concrete block, and they were so proud to show us their home. And I just thought, this is the size of my laundry room at home, you know? And I came back to my house and I was like, you guys say you have nothing and you have like 40 cereals in the cupboard. Like, you don't even understand what nothing is. And yet these people were, I mean, it was sad, but they were happy and they were okay. And they were doing it and they were pushing through. So you talk about resilience, and totally, totally. It was, yeah, it's hard to explain, I guess, unless you're there. You're much better at explaining it than I am.
yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's what you see. And in that house, how many people were living? Like, it's not like that's for one person, you know. It can be a family of six in an area that size, and water is an issue. There's so many things that are an issue in Haiti. My son, I've got a son from the Dominican Republic, one of my kids, and he does the work. He runs everything that we do in the DR, and he does some work in Haiti as well. And he always calls Haiti our Africa. Like, there are people going to Africa to go help because of the level of poverty and lack of clean water and all of that. And we have that right off our shore practically in Haiti.
Yeah, absolutely. Kim, what is your, you mentioned so many things that you do. What is, and this is probably a hard question, but maybe it isn't. What is your favorite thing that you do?
That's a hard question. Besides being a grandma, you mean?
Oh, perfect. I don't know. I mean, what's your favorite grandma?
That's a really good one. Yeah, that's a really good one. You know, I'll tell you, I am on a mission. I want to start a movement around love, because love is everything, everywhere, all the time. And, you know, for people who are Christians, there's a verse in the Bible that says that God is love. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, even if you're not a Christian, it's easy to recognize that there's something that is love, right? And is love, not that God loves, but that God is love, and then created us in his image, is the way I believe. And so with that, then we're love, right? So if we are love, then what does that mean? And that is what love is. It is all consuming. It's not something you go to the office, you hang it up in the coat closet, or you get home and you're having a bad day, and so you leave it in the car. Love is who you are always, and how you decide to live it and demonstrate it is up to you. But love is who you are.
Absolutely. I love that you said that. I guess we're going to use the word love over and over and over, which I don't think there's a better word to use. But love heals. You know, when you have a little kid who falls down and scrapes their knee, they run. Well, I mean, as a mom, they would run to me and I would hug them. And all I would do would be give them love. That's it. Like, there was nothing else that was happening. And yet it was huge what was happening. But because of the transference of love, their knee didn't hurt anymore. And they were okay, and they could run and they could play. And I think that we can get sort of distracted by what love is, thinking it's either romantic or it's friendship. And then it's like two things and that's it. But I haven't read your book, but I imagine you have found things like, it isn't just those two things. It's many, many things. It's God is love. And like you said, you know, I mean, I believe the same thing. If we're created in God's image, then we too have that capacity, you know, of healing through love, and that we are also love. Gosh, what a beautiful, beautiful mission to have a movement that there's more love. This world could just, everybody could use more love, I think. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you had to say, because it's so true. Love just shows up in so many different ways, and skinned knees and falling out of trees and whatever way it shows up. And it should, because mm-hmm. if it is who you are, it should be part of everything you do. And I think one of the myths about love is we hear that love's a two-way street, right? Mm-hmm. That you give love to get love. And the reality is, love is not a transaction. You know, if I give you money, you give me a pair of jeans, that's a transaction. Love is not a transaction. Love is not transactional in any way. Mm-hmm. If you're giving love to get love in return, you're setting yourself up for heartache and disappointment, because chances are really good your expectations of how you're going to get love back are going to fail you. Like, people give love the way they give love. Like, it's nothing that you have any control over. You know, when you first bring your baby home from the hospital, you've got total control. You decide when the baby eats, when the baby has a bath, when the baby sleeps. But then 6, 7, 8 months later, all your pans are out of the cupboards, banging, your Tupperware is everywhere. You've lost control. And I promise you never get it back again. You never get control back again. We control nobody but ourselves. We're the only ones that we have control over. So we don't have any control over what comes back to us. Our job is to love, period. Not to love so that, or not to love because then you get, no, your whole job is to love. Like that's it. And if you can recognize that and break it down to love doesn't judge.
Yeah.
Love isn't prideful and think that you're better than somebody else. There's so many things about love and so many things that are not love that if you really understand love and live love, then life is a million times better.
Absolutely. Oh, I just, all of it just makes me so happy what you're saying. So the Bible, the Ten Commandments, there's love the Lord thy God, and then love thy neighbor as thyself. And I like to joke just to ruffle feathers because, you know, I'll say, so the first commandment is judge the Lord thy God. And the second is judge thy neighbor as thyself. And everybody goes, no, no, no. They're like, nod. And they're like, wait, no, no, no. It's love. And I'm like, then why are we judging? Why are we doing this? That's not the commandment. The commandment isn't like, make sure that everybody else does everything the way that you think that they should. Like, that's nowhere, anywhere in any religion or universal law or karma or anything, you know, none of that exists. It is so much about love. And it's interesting that you were talking so much about love the other day. And I even shared this, I think, in a walkie-talkie. I was on my walk and somebody had pulled out of their driveway, getting ready to turn into the street, as people do. And I waited to go. And he saw me and he backed his car up for me to pass. Now, that probably doesn't seem like a big deal, but to me, I felt immense love, which shocked me. I thought I would have just been like, oh, that was nice. But I felt so much love. And I walked past and I was trying to like thank him. And, you know, he was looking down. I don't know if he was embarrassed or I don't know what he was doing. It didn't matter. But I just felt so loved like the whole day, because he backed up his car in his own driveway so I could walk across. Like, it was just the most beautiful feeling. And I don't even know if he knew that that's the effect that it had on me. In fact, he probably doesn't even remember he did it. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's not something I'm going to forget because of how I felt. It was just mm-hmm. incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that. Cause it's true. I mean, you can spread love in so many different ways. You can give love, you know, like by doing that or opening a door for somebody, smiling at somebody, all of those things can be done in love. Anything that you do, if you do in the name of love, it's going to come across that way, right? And if you think about the people that you're drawn to, the people that you go, man, I want to hang out with him more. I'd like to hang out with her some more. They're usually the people that have the greatest love for other people and are the least judgmental. Mm-hmm. Like I just believe that everybody should be who they believe God created them to be, not who I believe God created them to be, but who they believe God created them to be. And you're not going to change them anyway. We don't change people, right? Like, you hear a couple of people argue about politics. Neither one of them is going to change their mind. They both believe what they believe and they believe it, and they're going to continue believing it. And you're not changing anybody's mind. So if you can take those confrontational sessions, you know, those arguments and turn them into conversations, and because that's what love would do.
Yeah.
Because love listens. In fact, I took 1 Corinthians 13, love is patient, love is kind, does not envy, does not boast, et cetera. You know, you hear it at lots of weddings, your eyes glaze over because you've heard it so much. But I took each one of those words or phrases a month and worked on it. And if I'd only done the first month, my life would be different. My life would have changed if I would have stopped at month one. And it's love is patient. And that seems so simple. Well, of course, love is patient. You know, you're not mad when your three-year-old is hunting for his shoes and you're trying to get out the door, you know, or mad because somebody walked in with muddy boots. You're just patient and calm, whatever. Of course, love is patient. But I learned quickly that if you put love is or love is not in front of any word, it completely changes the meaning. So love that is patient, what that means is, and again, going back to what you said, we're just supposed to love everybody, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we're supposed to do. Love everybody. Love yeah. everybody. Doesn't mean you got to like them,
yeah.
but you can love everybody.
Yeah.
So in loving everybody, love that is patient would say that this moment right here, right now, is the most important moment of your life. Mm-hmm. What's in the past is in the past. What's in the future is yet to come. This is the most important moment. So if you love who you're with, you're in showing love that is patient, you are fully there. You are fully engaged. And I stunk at this. I was terrible. I thought that I was some multitasking genius. Like I could be in conversation with somebody, be thinking about who needs to go to soccer practice, what I'm going to make for dinner, a meeting that I have later, and be fully engaged at the same time. And found out quickly that that's not true. Mm-hmm. Fully engaged is fully engaged. And when I practiced, and it took a lot of practice, but when I practiced this and got there, I heard things, I hear things I never would have heard.
Yeah,
it's easy to make assumptions about what somebody's going to say because of what you know about them. But when you really listen and you show love that is patient, man, your whole world opens up. You hear things a whole different way. And then you see the person you're with a whole different way. And you know if somebody's listening to you, right? I mean, you know if you're being listened to, and we all want to be seen and we all want to be listened to. And so that is love that is patient. This is your moment. This is it.
That is such a cool way to see love is patient. I would have never put it that way. Was there like a moment where you realized that multitasking was not being there? Like, was it like a moment or eventually after practicing that first month? Like, when did it happen? Do you remember?
Well, yeah. Yes. Oh, yes. I certainly do remember. God, it took the entire month, every single month. I would think, oh, love is kind. That's easy. Of course, love is kind. You're kind. I'm kind, you know, whatever. And so I went into the month, you know, what is love? It's love is kind, love is patient, love is patient, love is patient, just looking for it everywhere. And at the end of every month, I would be hit over the head with something almost literally, sometimes literally, and go, oh, that's what that means. So I sent a lot of containers, big containers full of medical supplies and school supplies for different organizations in Haiti, to Haiti. It's horrible working at the docks. It's horrible getting everything out. It's the worst thing that you can do is try to do this. And that's why I did it, because it's so painful for everyone else to do it. And so we had a container. It was a disaster. My coworker in Haiti, just everything got messed up. And then night was going on and it was getting darker outside and there's no lights anywhere because there's little power in Haiti. And I was just kind of at the end of my rope, like everything that could go wrong with this particular container and unloading it and everything that could go wrong was going wrong. And I was frustrated as I'm thinking, love is patient, love is patient, love is patient, you know, trying. And then I noticed Patrick, his name is Patrick, my dear friend and coworker. His attitude was so different than mine. I had this, I don't know if it's an American thing. I don't know if it's my dad was super type A thing or what it was, but man, things should have gone this way. And this is how it should have happened. And this is, how can we mess it up? Like, this is what it should be. And we shouldn't be here in the dark and all of this. And Patrick was taking a moment at a time. He was showing me love is patient. He was showing it to me as I'm frustrated with him. And frustrated with everything else, he's just being Patrick because that's who he is. And so he was just calm the whole time. And he was, yeah, it's going to happen. Yeah. Okay. Right. You're right. We don't have it done yet. Yep. But it'll be okay. It'll happen. And I went, oh my gosh, I have been doing this so wrong. You know, Patrick is in the moment, every moment. And I was never hardly ever actually in the moment, unless I was whatever engrossed in some movie at the theater or something, then I'm in the moment. Right. But otherwise I wasn't. I had all these moments just pass me by. And so I learned from him what love that is patience is.
Did you change in that moment? Like as soon as you had that aha, were you like, did you just switch?
Yeah.
That fast? Yeah,
it was that fast. It took me until I got back to where I was staying. I was staying at this orphanage And it took me until I got back there. And then there was no water for a shower. And then, you know, I mean, you know, just thing after thing, Haiti thing after Haiti thing. And then I went, oh, what happened today? Oh my gosh, that's what it is. Like it just was like this revelation. Ah, you know, like finally I was handed the keys to the kingdom. Like, this is what love that is patient is. And then, yes, from that moment, I started trying to live it. I started practicing it from that moment.
That's so cool. I'd heard the term self-aware for a long time. And only recently have I come to understand what it really means. And I think it's just that, is being in a moment and having the opportunity for growth where something teaches or someone teaches you, and being self-aware, realizing that in yourself, oh, I see this thing that I want to be. I see this characteristic, and that's not what's happening inside. And then taking it and being like, well, but it is now.
Mm-hmm.
This is now who I am and how I am. And I have decided in my own wisdom, that's what self-aware is being able to say, this is something I desperately want and I'm not doing it. So that means right now I am. Now I change. Mm-hmm. It's different now. And I love that you were able to just, yeah, that's it. This is love is kind. Done. I'm doing it. And of course that means doesn't necessarily, maybe it does for you, but for me, it doesn't mean I'm perfect at it. It just means I'm very aware and often have to be like, oh, wait, no, I'm not doing that anymore. It's this way. And now I get to change and self-correct really quickly again, but it's not always easy, but man, it changes everything, doesn't it?
It does. It does. It changes everything. It changes everything. And you know, some of the words or phrases were ones I didn't want to do. You know, some I thought were really easy, but there were some that it's like, gosh, do I really want to do this one? Skip this one. You know, there's 14. So it actually took me 14 months. And I thought, well, there could be 13. There could be 12. 12 is better. That's a year. You know, that would be better. But, and one of those was love keeps no record of wrongs.
Okay.
And I thought, oh man, how is that even possible?
Yeah.
Like, you might forgive people, but you don't forget the things that happened to you. Right. So how is that even possible? And that month, at the end of the month, as it was every month, I was contacted by a gentleman from the States who wanted to bring a group of pastors over to see a water project we were working on out in the countryside. And so wanted me to show them. And so I said, sure, you know, they were thinking about getting involved. So there were 8 men that came from the U.S. And I brought 2 Haitian friends, Patrick and Robinson. And so that they could translate, and they knew the water project inside and out, and me. So 8 American men, 2 Haitian men, and me. So we got to where we were staying, and behind the cement wall, lots of things are behind cement walls in Haiti, was a small, small cement building. There were 2 rooms. Each room had 4 twin size beds. Again, 8 American men, 2 Haitian men, and me. But we brought an air mattress. We brought a couple cots. I'm thinking we can rearrange stuff. We're fine. You know, you only go in the room to sleep because it's hot in Haiti, right? And so I'm thinking we're good. Well, the head pastor, the guy that contacted me, called me over. Kim, can I talk to you? I'm like, sure. And he said, did you see the rooms? And I thought, oh, he's going to think I want my own room. So I'll just say, well, it's okay. I'll sleep outside. And he'll say, no. If anyone should sleep inside, it should be you. And then I'll say, well, I don't care if there's other people in my room. And then he'll go, good, because there's only so much space.
Right.
So I said, well, it's okay. I'll sleep outside. And he said, good. Because we have men on this trip that would not be comfortable with a woman in their room. That's what he said. I was flabbergasted.
You're like, no. That was not how this was supposed to go.
I know. But I volunteered. So I had to figure it out. You know, I had to figure out what I was going to do. And there was this piece of plywood kind of being held up by these wooden structures. And so first night I put my air mattress under there. So I thought, well, if it rains, at least I won't get wet or as wet. Right. Put the air mattress under there and crawled in and was scared to death because Haiti has tarantulas, big hairy tarantulas. Haiti has snakes, maybe chupacabras. I don't know, whatever's lurking in the bushes of Haiti. I was afraid of all of it. and I'm outside, just there I am, right? And so I was so afraid. I was so afraid. So I slept on my back thinking, okay, if I sleep on my back, if I have to run, that'd be the easiest position to get up and run. Like, that's what I was thinking. So I go to bed, my air mattress held air for about an hour, and then I'm on gravel, literally sleeping on gravel with, you know, a little bit of rubber between me and the gravel. And it was so loud because horns were honking and dogs were barking, and it just went on and on and on. And then finally that died down, I don't know, whatever time, midnight, 1 a.m. And then shortly after that, voodoo drums started in the distance. And then that kept me awake. And then finally that died down, maybe 4 a.m., 5 a.m. And so then I was finally able to get some sleep. So the first night came and went, no problem. So grateful. Great. You know, it was a good night. Second night, same thing. I'm on the gravel because the air mattress is so bad, and the horns and the dogs and the voodoo drums. And finally I'm asleep, but I woke up because there was something on my leg. And I thought, oh my gosh, does Haiti even have the anti-venom to whatever is about to bite me? Like, are they going to be able to airlift me to Miami in time to save a limb? Like, what is going to happen? I was so afraid. And so I slowly lifted my head and I slowly opened my eyes, and it was a chicken. There was a dang chicken on my leg. And I didn't know whether to be happy because it was a chicken and not something worse, or mad because the chicken woke me up from the little bit of sleep I was getting. Well, third night came and went, no problem. Fourth night, again, on the gravel, dogs, horns, voodoo drums, finally asleep. But again, I woke up because again, there was something on my leg. And again, I was so afraid. I was scared to death. And I'm thinking, Lord, 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 please, 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 what is going on? So I slowly lifted my head and I slowly opened my eyes. And again, it was the dang chicken. And again, I didn't know whether to be happy or mad. But I'll tell you, that night we had chicken for dinner. So the fifth night came and went without incident. All was well. And I got to say, at first, I was kind of bitter. I thought, I hope my boys would never treat a woman that way. You know, I mean, I'm strong, stronger than I think. But that doesn't mean I'm subhuman because I'm a woman. And that's what it felt like. Like, you're not good enough to sleep inside. You sleep outside because that's where you belong, woman. You know, I don't know, whatever. Right. But that's how I was feeling in the moment. And I was angry. And then I thought, oh, love keeps no record of wrongs. And then it dawned on me what that means. And what it means is, we're in charge of the narrative. We pick our own narrative, right? So it's shifting the narrative. That's what love that keeps no wrongs is shifting the narrative. So instead of all these rotten guys that did this rotten thing to me, it's, I could now literally sleep anywhere in the world and be perfectly fine, right? And so that's what love that keeps no record of wrongs is. And the narrative is 100% on us. We don't need to ever let anybody dictate how we take in anything that we take in. You know, there can be two guys in the same traffic jam, right? Mm-hmm. And one of them's honking on his horn, yelling out the window, his blood pressure's rising. Whoever he sees next is in trouble. If he's going home and his wife is there, man, she's in for it because he is elevated and he's mad, stuck in this traffic jam. And the very next car in the very same traffic jam could be this guy who's thinking, man, I heard about this podcast, you know, Stronger Than You Think. I think I'm going to listen to that because I can't go anywhere. There's nothing I can do about this. So he's calm, relaxed. Whoever he sees next, that's going to go okay. I think that's all right. And so two people in the exact same situation, but they both wrote a different narrative to their story. They did it differently. And that is something we control. So love that keeps no record of wrongs is shifting the narrative. To shift the narrative.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. I actually was hoping you would share that one because I heard it and I just thought, oh my gosh, Kim, you are incredible. That would be so scary. When I was in Haiti, we had a guide and it was always in the day. And like, we were so careful. I can't even imagine. I can't imagine it. I mean, I know it was kind of scary in the day, but that's so cool. And I love that you took the opportunity to learn instead of being bitter. And I like that you felt the feelings too. You know, you did. Sometimes I think we feel like we have to, if we're going to learn a lesson, then we got to not ever have feelings. Well, it's okay to feel the feelings, but then we let them go. And then we realize this is what I'm able to learn. Like you said, with the traffic jam, whenever I get cut off, I always laugh, and the kids know, my husband know, they're like, ah, somebody's on the way to the hospital. Their wife's about to have a baby. They have to rush. You know, I remember when I was in labor and my husband would, you know, he didn't care if there was a stop. It didn't matter what was going on. I was getting to the hospital.
That's right.
And we laugh about that. Now my kids are like, well, but mom, what if there's just one person in there? Maybe they just have to poop really bad. And I'm like, well, maybe that's it too.
Yeah.
And like, we could be mad, but nobody, I mean, as far as I know, people don't typically cut people off because they're thinking, they don't cut me off because they're thinking about me. There's something that's going on in their life, and I just happen to be in the way, so they're going to move on. So I love that you point out that love keeps no record of wrong. That's, gosh, and how freeing to not carry that around all the time with you.
Yeah, well, and I love what you said about the guy isn't thinking about you. The guy that just cut you off really doesn't probably have anything to do with you, or maybe you, I don't know, sometimes I get distracted and make people mad on the road, and so it might have something to do with me, but typically it doesn't. And so when you are mad or bitter, you're carrying on to something, right? You're holding on. You can't see that person anymore because they did this rotten thing, you know, whatever. They have no idea. Most of the time, people have no idea that you're mad at them. They're not thinking about you. But yet you're letting your thoughts go there with them when there's so many better things to think about and better things to put energy toward that let it go. Right? I mean, there's no turning back the hands of time. I've certainly hurt people over the years and regret it. Like, you know, I feel bad. Anything that I've ever done to anybody, I feel bad that it happened, but you can't go back. You can't go back and go, okay, well, we'll make it unhappen somehow. No, it happened. It's for real. It's for real. But you can change the narrative. You can make your experience different in your heart, really, in your heart, in your whole being, because you are love. So you can do that. And I love what you said about feeling the feelings. That's so true. So often we don't stop and feel the feelings. And sometimes we put shame to those feelings. And we think there's something wrong with us if we're feeling the feelings. If you're feeling something, feel it. Feel it. It's okay. It doesn't make you bad. It doesn't make you good. It doesn't make you better than anybody else, but feeling doesn't make you worse than anybody else. Feel it, live through it. You know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, or you're hoping there certainly is, but feel it. You know, whether you're deep in grief, if you're deep in grief, feel it. Let yourself be. Don't worry about what other people think ever. You know, people want to judge grief. Don't let people judge your grief. Your grief is your own. Your grief is your, feel it. Feel it. If you have a bad day, something comes on and all of a sudden you're just kind of out of sorts and you look at the calendar and go, oh gosh, it's the anniversary of losing my mom, you know, whatever. Feel it. Feel it. And the good stuff too. The good stuff. It's not being greedy or being somehow bad to really feel the good stuff. Take it in. Feel it. Feel the feels. Feel the feelings. It's so much healthier than putting them in a bottle and putting them on the shelf and then watching them explode because you left them there too long. So feel the feelings. I love that you said that.
Thank you. I'm sure that you have been through plenty of feeling the feelings with even just the short little bit that you've shared about what you've been through. It's hard. And I think I've heard people say about grateful, aren't you over it yet? And I just think that's the hardest thing. You don't get over it. You learn to live with this new whatever, you know, the new way of life, the new challenges that you have. You learn how to adapt, but I don't think you ever get over something like that. And I don't think it's very kind of people to assume they understand what it feels like when they haven't been through it. And we haven't, none of us have been through what somebody else has been through. You know, there's similarities, you know, maybe somebody's lost someone or they've, but not exactly, you know, how many can say that they were diagnosed with breast cancer and working through it. And then their husband was diagnosed pancreatic cancer. And shortly after he passed away, like not very many people have that exact story. So how can they know how you felt, you know? So it's, it's people do that.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. I always think, you know, you'd never get over it. I agree with you, but you also don't want to get over it because that's part of your life. That who you've lost, they were part of your life, and you've got memories and you've got history. You've got all kinds of things with them. And so getting over it isn't something, but the way I look at it is you can get on top of it. You eventually can get on top of it so that you can breathe again and you can make it through the day and you can do things that you need to do and you can see what that different life is. Like you said, figure out this whole new life that now all of a sudden you have. And that's, I think, getting on top of grief so that it's not consuming you, because it can so be so consuming.
Yeah.
Or however long it decides to be consuming.
It's interesting while you were talking about that. If it's okay, I'll talk about something just a little bit lighter. I had a friend come up to me. This has been years ago at a church activity. And she came up kind of in this panic and was like, "Oh my gosh, Sarah, I'm so glad I caught you." She kind of had a breath. And I was like, "Elizabeth, what is going on?" And she's like, I just have to apologize. And I was like, "For what?" She's like, "I said something and I know I hurt your feelings." I was like, "What did you even say?" And she looked at me. She's like, "Are you kidding?" I'm like, and I am thinking as hard as I can, like, what interaction did I have where she said, and I am like trying so hard to recall. And I said, "I truly have no idea what you're talking about." And I'm like, "You're forgiven. I mean, if that's what you're looking for, I don't even know what else to say." And she just looked at me with this look like she had been suffering for so long, feeling that she had destroyed my life, I guess. I don't even know what it was that she thought she had said. But it's so fascinating because of the narrative, because of the suffering that she was doing in her own self, that, you know, she was miserable for so long. And luckily she was able just to be freed from it. Cause I was like, "I don't, like, really, truly, I have no idea what you said, and it is gone." Because I don't feel it anymore, or never did. But it's funny that funny is not the right word. I don't know. It's never the right word. And I use it far too often, but it's interesting how we can do that to ourselves. And one of the things you said too, in talking about love, I think it's difficult sometimes to think of loving ourselves. We have to be kind with ourselves. We need to change and do better. But if we're to keep no record of wrong, if love keeps no record of wrong, then perhaps that's with ourselves, which means to change and don't do it, but don't keep beating yourself up for something that you're trying to work on. I don't know. What do you think of that? I just was thinking about ourselves on that.
Yeah. Yeah. 150%. Like, yes, that is such a good point that I don't even think about that enough as I should. But it's so true, because each of those apply to loving yourself, of course. And you can hear things sometimes, "Well, you got to love yourself to love others. You got to love yourself, da, 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 da." And different things come to mind, right? Depending on who says it, depending on how it's said, you know, depending on how you're hearing it. And it can sound vain, or it can sound over the top. But the reality is that there is one of you. You know, I think about like the Mona Lisa. The Mona Lisa went up for sale. Who knows how many millions of dollars Elon or somebody would pay for it, right?
Yep.
It's because it's a one of a kind masterpiece. And so are you. You're a one of a kind masterpiece. There's never been anybody exactly like you. There never will be anybody exactly like you. You are the only you ever, forever, forever, and ever. There's something wonderfully spectacular about that. You're the only you. You're it. And for that reason alone, you should love yourself, because you are a masterpiece. You're the only one. And loving yourself does not mean you love others less. Does not mean you think you're better than everybody else. That's not what it is. But it is recognizing, you know, I think for so long, especially women, I keep going off on tangents, but I think for so long, especially as women, when we're little girls, you know, it's all, you know, don't look at yourself, you know, in the mirror so much, or don't, you know, compare yourself to somebody, or I don't know. Like if you love yourself too much, it's like you're being selfish or you're being self-centered or something. And that it is selfish. And really the opposite is true. If you love yourself, then you can love others in a whole different way. And so it's really the most selfless thing you can do is to recognize your value, recognize your worth, recognize your uniqueness, recognize that you are a special one-of-a-kind masterpiece, and love yourself. Then that's when you can fully love others. So yes, the things we beat ourselves up about, keep no record of wrongs, man, change the narrative, laugh about it. My word, you know, there have been things throughout my life that I'm like, oh my gosh, in seventh grade, I said that one thing, or I did that one thing. I can't believe I did that. What was I thinking? Seventh grade, my word. It's like, that's a get over it moment. That's when you can say get over it, right? But really it's, you, sometimes in your mind, you have to do exactly that, is shift the narrative and go, well, what did I learn from it? You know, or how is it affecting me now? Like, what do I do different? How do I act differently now? Because I held on to that because I felt so bad about that, that there's no way in the world I'd ever do that again. Right. So yeah. Yeah. Love yourself is so important. So vital. So vital. And you're worthy of it. You're worthy of it. Everybody is worthy of love. There's nobody that is unworthy of love. Everybody is. And you are. So love yourself. Absolutely.
Yeah. So well said, Kim. Beautifully said. The thoughts and the things, I think it's easy to say things like, oh no, I do, you know, but the thoughts that we have in our head, sometimes we don't even need enemies. We're just so mean. You know, we see the blemishes. I had somebody the other day just say, oh, you look so beautiful. And I just said, oh, well, I've got, like, immediately I was like, no, but I've got bad compromise, and I've got this, and I've got this. And I was like, she didn't say that for any other reason than that was what she felt. And it's, we're so quick to just flip it around and be, no. So yeah, self-love is, I think, something that all of us could do a little bit better. And like you said, it's not being vain or selfish. In fact, I agree with you that if we can be kinder to ourselves, we're going to be kinder to others. Because if we start off all grumpy with ourselves, like, we're already kind of, you know, kind of grumpy. But if we're just happy and kind and loving with ourselves, then it's easier to be that way towards others because we already started off that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you said that. That is so good. The way you said it is so good. Because it's so true. You know, it's so easy. How many times have you heard two women and one walks up and goes, oh gosh, I love your dress. Oh, well, I got it on sale. Like, we have to immediately give a disclaimer, right? Don't think that I overspent on my dress. And oh, I've got bags under my eyes. And oh, my hair didn't turn out right today, or whatever it is. When you can get to the point where you can just accept a compliment and just say thank you, without anything attached to it, nothing, zero attached to it. Just someone gave you a compliment, thank them for the compliment, period. Not somebody gave me a compliment, now I've got to give them a compliment. No, you don't have to. If you want to, feel free. But if you feel like you have to, then it's kind of empty compliment, right? Then it's not coming from the right place. So when you can get to the point where you can just say thank you, where you can just receive a compliment and let it lay right where it is, that's when you know you're loving yourself.
When it comes back to what you said, I think at the very beginning, that love is not transactional. And that would be a transaction, right? If we believe that somebody says something nice to me, therefore I owe this. I mean, that's absolutely transactional. So brought it full circle.
Yeah.
Very nice job.
There you go.
Yeah. So I'm curious, gosh, this time has just flown. This is the funnest thing I do all day is talk to humans. I just love it. Are there any other ones in there of the love is that surprised you?
Kind. Love is kind. So, month number two, because I thought it was so obvious, right? You're kind, I'm kind, right? You do kind things, acts of kindness, da da da, kind, kind, everyone's kind. But what I figured out, I know we're going long, so I don't know if you want to hear the story.
I'd love to if you have time.
Okay. I do. All right. So that month, at the end of the month, again, at the end of the month, there's a place I love to go. It's called Sisters of Charity Home for Sick Children. It's Mother Teresa's order that has this wonderful home for sick children. It's not a hospital, but they do their best with these kids and they get food and they get whatever. I love to go there. And I love to go in their lower level. It's all cribs, tons of cribs. And then I love to hone in on a baby and hold them and feed them and just love on them for the day. I just love that. I love it. And so I went and I saw this little tiny infant, which normally, you might see a 3-month-old or something, but usually not probably younger than that, right? And so I saw this newborn baby in this pink terry cloth sleeper, and I was immediately drawn over there. And I looked down, and he was beautiful, beautiful. I found out his name was Christopher. So probably in some sleeper donated by someone who had their beautiful little American girl in it, which how sweet. And so then here he is in this pink sleeper. But he's got tubes in his nose. He's got an IV in his arm. And I reached down and held his hand and just looked at him. He was gorgeous. And then I noticed there was a woman standing at the end of the bed. And she just had this sadness that you could feel it. It was like a cloud over her. And I thought, wow, what's going on? And so as the morning progressed, I found out more and more about the story. So Natalie was Christopher's grandma. And Natalie had one daughter and Christopher's mom, who died while giving birth to Christopher on the dirt floor of their one-room house. And then Christopher wasn't taking milk. And Natalie thought, well, it's because it's not his mother's, he'll get used to it. But time went on and things did not improve. And so she walked 4 miles to get to the Sisters of Charity. She walked for miles and miles. A long, long way, holding that baby, got him there. They immediately gave him IV and oxygen. He needed oxygen. And so the best they could figure out was he must have some obstruction that probably in this country, doctors would take care of right after birth and all would be well. And you'd go home with a healthy, happy baby. But in Haiti, there's few doctors, fewer hospitals, and no hope for someone who has $0. And so here she was. And so we did get a hold of a doctor who was willing to do the surgery, that doctor that I know down there. And in this place, it's only a few miles away from where we were, but Haiti, it's so congested. And so getting anywhere, I always feel like it takes an hour, right, to get anywhere. So they were, making preparations, right? And we're waiting. And at one point in time, Christopher stopped breathing and we stopped breathing. And in a panic, we're looking around and we noticed there was a kink in his oxygen tube and we unkinked it and he immediately started breathing again. And, oh, that's so great. But then we realized we needed a portable oxygen tank to get him to the hospital, right? And the sisters didn't have one. So I know a lot of people in Haiti. I know a lot of people in Port-au-Prince. That's where we were, in Port-au-Prince. And I called everybody I could think of and asked them where to get one, if they knew or if they could go find one. Nobody knew where to get one. Some people went to go try to find one. There was not one to be had in a city of 2 million people. No portable oxygen tank. So here's poor Natalie with her baby grandson, that precious, beautiful little boy, And she has to make this decision. Does she stay there on the oxygen because he needs the oxygen, or take the risk and get him to the hospital? But she knew that if they stayed, he's not going to make it. And at least taking the risk, at least he might be okay. So they pulled a van up as close as they could to the closest door. And then all of a sudden, two nuns came over, habits seemed to be flying everywhere, and they took the oxygen away from his nose, grabbed his IV bag, and went out the door in a flash. And I was like, oh gosh, please, Lord, let him be. And then I turn around and Natalie's standing there. And I'm like, LA, go, go. I thought maybe she didn't know she could go. And then she pointed at her feet and she had no shoes. And she knew that she would not be allowed in the hospital with no shoes. So I quick whipped off my sandals. I put them in one hand, grabbed her by the arm, ran her out the door, and she hopped in just as the van was pulling away. And here I'm working on Love is Kind, right? So giving Natalie my sandals, in that moment, I realized what Love is Kind is. Love that is kind has 0, 0, 0 expectation of ever receiving anything in return. Ever. Not a thank you, not a thank you note, not a reciprocal casserole, not anything, nothing, not she went to my daughter's wedding, I have to go to hers. Nothing, nothing in return. You are kind because love is kind, period. And so I knew I'd never get my sandals back. I knew chances were really good I'd never see Natalie again. I'd never know for sure maybe what happened. I knew that those sandals were gone, but of course I gave them to her. And you would give them to her. Anybody would do the same thing, right? I can get another pair of sandals. Even if I couldn't, I would have given them to her.
Yeah.
That is love that is kind, is zero expectation of getting anything in return. Then it occurred to me that, yeah, that was love is kind. The zero expectation love, exactly what love is kind is. But what Natalie gave me that day was so much greater than a pair of sandals. She shared that precious baby with me. We held each other and we held his hands all day and just loved on each other and loved on that baby. And she did not have to share that moment with me. And she did, not expecting me to give her sandals, not expecting me to give her anything. And that was the biggest act of love that is kind that I can think of ever happening in my life.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Oh, I feel it. I feel it so big. So thank you for sharing Natalie and Christopher and that beautiful story. It's incredible when we're open to learning what God wants us to learn and who he wants us to be, just the amazing things that can happen. I remember reading in scripture that I feel like it talks about earthquakes a lot. And I always wonder, was it an earthquake that people could feel, or was it the earthquake that happened in your soul? Because I bet you could say that there was an earthquake that moment for you, because everything changed for mm-hmm. you, even though outwardly maybe nothing did except your sandals, but on the inside you had transformation after transformation after transformation because you were open to it. So beautiful. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your incredible stories and what you've learned, and it's just beautiful. Thank you for sharing. And I know that a lot of this has come about because of the grief that you've experienced. And so I don't want to gloss over that. I don't want to act like it never happened. I thank you for sharing, even in that grief, the beautiful lessons that you've learned. You're just such an incredible human. I remember sitting at that table with you in Houston and just wanting to know more. And I needed their time to be magnified somehow, where we could have a day with everyone and it could just kind of be boiled down. But you passed me a note and said, here's some ideas. I don't know if you like them or care. And I just appreciated all the love and support. And so thank you for joining me today and for being so willing to share your story and for everything you do in Haiti. My heart is there too. I appreciate that for them. Thank you. Because of people like you, they have water, you know, that they didn't realize that they could get another way. So I want to thank you for the people of Haiti. I want to thank you for all the people that you're touching. This has just been absolutely beautiful and life-changing for me. I took notes and And I can't wait to get your books and just be there with you and experience it. So thank you so much, Kim.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you. And I'm not saying this because you said such wonderful things about me. So little disclaimer, I guess, on the disclaimer. We're not supposed to have a disclaimer.
Right, whatever.
But whatever. But I appreciate what you're doing, that you're doing this, that I appreciate the opportunity, but I also appreciate the overall picture of what you're doing and what you're bringing to people and lives that you're touching. And I think there's so many lives that you just have no idea. You have no idea how many lives you're touching. So thank you for doing what you do. Thank you for being so willing to do what you do.
Thank you. What a fun hour this has been. It is flown by and I just feel lifted. I'm going to float out of this room now. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And if people want to get in touch with you, I guess I'll, if there's some place that's like the best way to get in touch with you or to listen to you or to learn more about you.
Probably my website. I'm literally the only Kim Sorrell, spelled my way, in the entire world because my last name is obnoxious. It has way too many letters. It has two R's, two E's, two L's, Sorrelle. But kimsorrell.com is my website. And so that's a great, great way to get in touch. And love is, you know, I'm just trying to spread the love. And so love is available in Amazon. It's in brick and mortar stores. It's wherever. And buy one and send one, you know, like spread the love. I mean, it's not about me. It's about the love. And so I encourage you to do it.
Excellent. Will do for sure. This world could use plenty more love. Each one of us could use more love, couldn't we? I mean, I keep saying this world and this vague, ambiguous, I could use more love. And if I receive more love, I'm better able to give it. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your time and for your love. And this has just been wonderful. I really appreciate it. And we should do it again. I think it'd be really fun.
It would be really fun. This has been great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kim. I'll talk to you later. Have a good one.